Hey everyone, this is Amit Abner and welcome to Diaspora Talks. Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of Diaspora Talks. In this episode, I speak to co-founder and COO of Hive Earth Construction, Joel Eisen. Hive Earth are on a mission to build eco-friendly, sustainable and affordable housing in Ghana and across Africa. Using locally sourced materials, Hive Earth incorporates the traditional method of rammed earth, which is actually used in traditional mud huts. We discuss the huge housing deficit in Ghana, being a woman in construction, building a team and much more. But first, a quick note. I wanted to share an incredible opportunity for Black British businesses looking to scale and take investment in the next 12 months. Cornerstone Partners, the UK's first Black angel network, in partnership with Foundervine, have launched Cornerstone 2.0, a 9-week long program designed to scale businesses run by Black entrepreneurs. If this sounds like you, apply by the 11th of September at www.foundervine.com/cornerstone. The link will be in the show notes.
Say before, like, we looked at the traditional mud house. We actually stayed in
houses
in the village. Yeah, like the first time, I was actually quite scared because I've never. I think the first day that I went, I was like, nah, I need to psych myself up. So let's go stay in a hotel this night, and then we'll come back the next night and we'll stay in it because it was. I've never, you know, stayed at anything like that before.
Yeah,
like,
no, real village life.
There was no water. Like, if you had to, like, you know, get up and...
Yeah, it's a hole.
Like, a hole in a forest. Yeah. There was no mobile phone network, nothing. So it was quite...
Okay, so this is real R&D, the real thing.
Yeah, it was real R&D. Right, so my name is Joel Eisen. I'm the co-founder and COO of Hive Earth Construction. So we're a construction company based in Accra, Ghana. And we use locally sourced materials such as laterite to build affordable and eco-friendly structures. My background is actually in property management, property renovation, and also interior design. I've actually been involved in property management for about 10 years from the age of when I was 16 years old. My dad used to run his own property management company. So every day, like after college, on the weekends when I was at uni, I would be helping out in the office. And then after uni, I just kind of took that on full time. So that's more what my background is. I did go to university as well. I studied business management and marketing. So yeah, that's my
Cool. All right. So now you're in property in Ghana, and that's your background. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's what you were always going to do? Because I know that you had some other business ideas before, and you had some other roles. So do you feel as though that was always like the inevitable option for you?
Yeah, I mean, with me, like, I've always been quite entrepreneurial from a young age. Like, I always thought that I was going to end up running my own business because, I don't know, I thought it was just a normal...
I guess because you saw your dad doing it, then it would make sense, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've never really seen my dad having a job. Like, he's always done his own things. I think me, my brother and my sister, I kind of get the entrepreneurial thing from him. So but because he's been involved in property for a long time and it's just something that I've grown up with, I think inevitably I would have ended up doing property, but I have done other things in the past. Like, I think when I was at university, I had like my own cake business, where I used to just, like, you know, bake cakes for, like, my friends and you know their birthday parties and things like that. And and then obviously, like, interior design, which is not, you know, property, but it's similar, where it kind of taught me about, you know, reading building plans and, you know, managing contractors, and then also just more of an insight into more of the construction side as opposed to just managing a property.
That makes sense. Okay, cool. Let's sort of like backtrack a bit then, because you mentioned you're the COO of Hive Earth.
So could you introduce Hive Earth and describe your company to someone who's unfamiliar with it?
Okay, so Hive Earth, we're an eco-construction company. So we use local materials to build with, such as latrite. And latrite is basically the red soil that you see like all over the
Okay.
So it's just a combination of clay, sand, silt, and then crushed granite. And then we use either cement as a stabilizer, or if you want to go 100% eco-friendly, we use lime, which is a component of cement anyway, but it's just more in its raw form. And lime is available abundantly in Ghana. But the reason that we don't use it often is because it's quite expensive. A lot of the lime deposits are owned by foreign companies, and they normally just export it outside of Ghana to like Europe and the States. So if you want to buy like a bag of lime as opposed to a bag of cement, a bag of lime is twice the price of what a bag of cement is. So to keep our costs down, we use cement. Even though we don't really want to, we want to be 100% eco-friendly. It just helps us to keep our costs down. So when we get all those materials, we form it, we mix it into a damp mix, and then we pour it into forms, and then we ram it so that it becomes as hard as stone. So what we're doing is basically forming a sedimentary rock with these materials so that it's, you know, very solid and monolithic. And then we just seal it with a plant-based sealant. So yeah, that's in essence what we do, and that's in essence what Rammed Earth is. The name Hive Earth actually comes from the beehive, because our
as in Beyonce
because
or the beehive
it could be like the beehive, you know, the beehive are always busy. The beehive are always busy.
Right, I get it.
Yeah, so yeah, because our work is so labor-intensive, we don't use any machines. We used to use machines. But then we realised the use of machines is not very eco-friendly, because if we're going to be using compressors and rammers, we have to put fuel in it, and that just emits too much on the site. And then also using compressors is kind of like using a jackhammer. So we just thought that if we're going to be having workers that are going to be working in our company for years, and they're going to be using this jackhammer all day, every day, then we don't want them to have, like, you know, arthritis. So we thought, like, let's just get rid of this and just let's do everything manually. So it's a very labor intensive type of construction. So they're the busy bees. We call them the killer bees. And then there's me. I'm the queen bee. And then you've got my partner who's the king. I don't know if they're the king bee, but they're the king bee of the company. So we're just busy bees in the hive. Instead of making honey, we're ramming walls.
Got it.
The name.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I guess I have many questions from what you just said, but I think my first question is, what is your motivation behind this, and what is the point? Because you've mentioned that, like, it can be quite expensive, and you've also mentioned that it's quite laborious. So many people, I guess, when they've heard what you said about Hive Earth, would probably think, why don't you just do the traditional property? That's quite lucrative. Why have you gone into a sort of like a non-traditional way of building properties in Ghana?
Okay, well, actually building with local materials, what we do is actually but it's using lime, which is a local material, we use cement in our construction. So our homes, our buildings are about 30-40% cheaper than what you get on the market. Like, even at the moment, we're in the process of actually building a 3-bedroom house prototype for about $15,000. So how much is that in pounds? £1,000. Yeah, so that is, you know, 3 bedrooms. You have your, you know, kitchen, dining, and then you have like a mezzanine floor as well, where you can have like a little office, and then like a roof terrace, balcony, everything. So that's going to be our affordable home prototype. But for me personally, I'm a problem solver. Like, I like to solve problems, and Ghana has a huge housing deficit of about
2 million
homes. So we need that to kind of catch up, so that, you know, everyone can kind of have a home. But then even that, the homes that are being built at the moment are not really affordable. And homes that are deemed as affordable, you're looking at about $50,000 minimum. And even that, those type of homes are normally, you know, poorly built. So we wanted to, you know, build something that's modern and sustainable, especially something for the youth, because, you know, 70% of the population on the continent are under the age of 25. And at this age, you know, you get a lot of people that are, you know, starting their careers or they're into their careers, they're starting families, and they want to have something that's stable, that they can, you know, grow their families and just have some rooms. Rent prices in Accra especially is extremely high. If you want something decent, I'm sure you've seen, like, if you want something decent, you're looking at, like, $800 plus a month, and then you have to pay...
2 years, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, like, for the average Ghanaian, that's just way too expensive. So we thought that if we can come up with a product that you can use your 2 years advance rent money to actually own a home, then it can solve the high rent issues, and also just give people hope that they can also, you know, own a home one day. And also, like, Accra itself is, you know, super overpopulated. You know, with affordable homes, we wanted to also encourage, like, urban-rural migration. You know, there's a lot of... so our model is basically you come and build on your own.
Right.
And, yeah, so a lot of people, you know, have lands, like, on the outskirts of Accra, or, like, you know, in the eastern region, which are quite popular. And those areas are not really far from Accra. Like, you can buy a plot of land in Mampong, for example, which is, like, an hour from, like, central Accra, in a beautiful location, and you'll be paying, like, a tenth of the price of land of what you'd be paying for in Accra. So that's something that we really want to encourage, to kind of just get people out of Accra, because it's just so populated. You know, with me, like, I've been raised in the country. Like, I've lived in Luton for about 20 years, and for me to have, like, you know, clean air and you know, something that's just not, a place that's not so crowded, is so important. Like, I think they even said that in Accra, like, one of the number one killers is like pollution. Like, a lot of people suffer from, like, you know, lung disease, because the pollution is just, it's just too much. It's way too much. And then also, I'm sure you've heard recently
flooding,
floods in Accra. Yeah, because it's just, people are just building on, like, waterways, and you know, obviously, like, the amount of people, like, putting rubbish in the gutters, it's just too much. So this is something that we also want to help. And then, yeah, and then also the sustainability.
Yeah, I was about to ask about that, because it seems that that's quite a key part to that method of building.
So yeah, just looking at, you know, working with using non-toxic, you know, natural materials. So we're basically looking at reinventing the mud house, you know, through our research.
As in the traditional, you know, the mud huts. Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So so basically the traditional mud house can last you, let's say, for about 90 years. They last for quite a long time. But with these, they're normally just built, like, you know, with just, you know, slapping mud on top of each other. So there's no stabilizers in there. They're not compressed. So we just look at how we can improve on this. And I mean, we've always said that the traditional mud house is something that we should have evolved from.
Right.
But then we kind of just, we kind of just left it and just kind of took what the West gave us.
Yeah.
Cement. Which is imported. So that's one thing that makes construction in Ghana so expensive. So basically what we're doing is, you know, a way more advanced earth construction method than what's being done in the villages. You know, so our buildings can last you for hundreds of years. I'll give you a fun fact. Even the Great Wall of China was built using our construction method, and it's still standing today. I think it's been around for more than 300 years. And even then they didn't even use stabilizers. There wasn't cement invented back then. So I think, so they used rice soup as their stabilizer, and it's still there today. But it's just the way and the method that they actually built with the earth that they had available to them.
That's so interesting. I think even the point you made about the fact that this is something that Africans could have evolved, but things like that and were seen as inferior, and we've taken on, like, the Western way of construction. So I really love the fact that you're trying to modernize something that is basically indigenous to Africans, and it isn't alien, and in some respects is quite superior because it's eco-friendly and it lasts, and you can't say the same about concrete. So I love that. The next question I wanted to ask you then was, of course, you mentioned that you grew up in Luton and now you're based in Ghana. What was that transition like? And I read in your Lionesses of Africa interview that you initially went to Ghana and you started another business, like a honey business, but that wasn't as successful, but you stuck it out.
Yeah.
So what was your motivation for staying? Because a lot of people have gone back to Ghana, tried something, and then it's failed for whatever reason, and then they just couldn't hack it. They've come back.
Yeah. Okay, so honestly, look, when I did go to Ghana, like, my intention wasn't to stay at all. Initially, I was only supposed to go for 3 months. As well as doing the honey business, which I'd started with my sister, I also had a few interior design jobs that I had set up for me before I actually went to Ghana. So that was something that was supplementing my income over there as well. So you know, at the time, you know, I had a lot of jobs coming through, like one after the other, and also I you know, had a job in a relocation, so that also helped me to get more interior design jobs. So I would say, like, probably like around the 2 year mark, like, work started to really like dry up because the honey business didn't go according to plan. I mean, there was a lot of research that we should have done before I even left the UK. But that was more to do with, like, regulation of importing honey into the UK. It wasn't so much with Ghana.
Right.
And then also, you know, my relocation job, work started drying up there, so I wasn't getting any interior design jobs either. Normally, when expats would come, they would come with, like, huge budgets, and then, you know, they'll come with huge budgets for furnishing and in designing their place where they'll be staying for the 2 years. So that was also that was always given to me. But because I think 2 years in, the currency
was
really bad. Yeah, I think at the time it was like 7.5
cents. Yeah, I've heard about this.
The economy was just so bad. So a lot of international companies were leaving. And then also a lot of companies were just recruiting within Ghana, so they're actually bringing expats in. So there was hardly any work at the time. And then also when I did come into Ghana, I'd actually started doing research into affordable housing. So any money that I was getting, me and my partner were actually doing R&D affordable housing. Any money we would get, we'd put it into research. Any time we'd get on the weekends, we'd just put it into research. So, and then even at that time as well, like, my partner, he had a land business, and that also, you know, started going under. Like, people weren't buying, you know, he had some issues, you know, Ghana land issues
are very, very contentious, things.
Yeah, very, very. So, like, towards the end of, like, year two, I was just like, you know what, I need to go, like,
getting tough.
Like, I literally was, it was getting tough. Like, I was broke. Like, I had, like, nothing. So I was really conflicted whether to stay or to go. So I actually came back for a couple of months and just kind of just wanted to get, like, my mind, you know, back in place and to really, you know, think about, you know, what I was going to do, if I was going to stay in the UK and be safe and, you know, work for a couple of years, or if I'm actually going to go back and, you know, take this massive risk, even though I had virtually nothing, and to see how, you know, things can go. But actually went back because, I don't know, like, when I was here, I just thought, like, nah, like, one of the reasons, you know, why I left, you know, the UK was to, you know, have a successful business, and, you know, I wanted to really make an impact on the continent, you know, like, I really wanted to, you know, break a lot of, you know, stereotypes of, you know, what people expected of me, and, you know, I just wanted to break the same old story of, you know, going to Africa, failing and coming back. And at the time, there was a lot of talk about Africa Rising, so I wanted to be part of the success story. I didn't want to get in there late, and, you know, I just wanted to just, you know, break the expectations of me as a woman.
Construction,
working in Ghana. So, and then I also wanted to help the affordable housing crisis, because I thought that, you know, I put all of this money and this time into, like, research, and I'm just, like, you know, keep it to myself. So I came back, And then me and my partner, like the little money that we had, you know, we were in his mum's like front porch, just like making samples, and then we just gave it out to some architects, and luckily we got the attention of like a really you know, popular architect in Ghana, and he gave us our first job, and then from there, like, we've just been, you know, getting more and more work. So it's worked out for itself. Like now, like, you know, now we're getting attention of like world renowned architects.
Wow.
Like, really, really famous, popular architects. I don't want to say who yet until we sign, but now, like, we're getting some.
That's really exciting. Wow. That's exciting. Yeah. And I think that's a really like inspiring story, because it's obviously taking you a lot of grit. And one thing I noticed from when you were talking is that, like, what has driven you has been your passion and like your motivation to really like drive like a change in Africa, in Ghana, etc. And I think that's really key, because like, I feel like if a lot of people go back and say, oh, they want to, like, you know, make money or something, like that kind of drive run out really quickly. Another thing that I noticed is that you invested a lot in R&D, and I guess that's a lesson that you learned from your previous business, because you mentioned that you didn't do a lot of research, right, for your honey business. But I can imagine like doing research into this type of construction would have been quite difficult. So how did you go about conducting that research into rammed earth and sustainable housing and things like that?
Okay, so with the sustainable and affordable housing, like, we knew that the problem was there. So we just thought, okay, if we can, like, find a way of, you know, solving it and getting around it, then, you know, we can be really successful for this. So because we didn't have that much money, like, we couldn't go and get, like, an expert to, you know, teach us how to land earth. So with the lands that my partner had bought from his business, we were there and we were just thinking, do you know what? There's so much different types of soil on this land. There's so many different types of colours. Like, we must be able to do something with this. So as I was saying before, like, we looked at the traditional mud house. We actually stayed in
houses
in the village. Yeah, like, I, the first time, actually, I was actually quite scared because I've never. I think the first day that I went, I was like, nah, I need to psych myself up. So let's go stay in a hotel this night, and then we'll come back the next night and we'll stay in it, because I've never, you know, stayed in anything like that before.
Yeah,
like,
there's village life.
There was no water. Like, if you had to, like, you know, get up and
it's a hole
in a forest. Yeah. There was no mobile phone network, nothing. So it was quite
okay. So this is real R&D, the real thing.
Yeah, it was real R&D. So we just, you know, stayed in the mud house for a few weeks, and we just kind of like noted down the advantages of, you know, a mud building. We actually saw some women constructing a mud house. And then we just kind of, you know, saw, okay, how can we improve on the technique? And then we went back to our land. We literally just learned off of, you know, Google, YouTube, books. It took us months to, you know, get the right formula, you know, get the right mix, get the right formwork. And then when we finally did, we built a little show home. Cool. But then The walls were quite small, so it wasn't something that we could really, like, you know, take on, like, you know, huge job. So I'll even say, like, from then, it probably took us even like another 5 years to really perfect our craft. So it took us a really, really long time, but I can actually confidently say now that we're really, really good at what we've done. Like, even, you know, in our earlier work, like, you'll see, like, you know, some of our walls have got cracks in it, or, you know, like, maybe they're, like, you know, a little bit tilted and stuff. So, you know, we really have to take some risks to just for our business to survive and to just kind of, like, learn from our mistakes. But now I can say that we're quite confident in what we're doing, to the point where we're even, like, running workshops and teaching other people.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing. I guess, yeah, that makes sense, because in order for, like, this sort of method to be sustainable, it has to be taught, right? So that sounds good. I wanted to go back to an earlier point you made about the reason for your name and the fact that you have a hive and you have, like, busy bees and your labourers. My question is, how have you gone about building your team? Because, of course, you mentioned as well, being a woman in construction, Have you had any difficulties of locating and retaining really skilled people? Because this is, I guess this is sort of like a specialism that has to be done, like, right? What's that experience been like?
Okay, so all of our team are actually from rural areas. So all of our team are from, like, villages. So in the past, when we were doing our R&D, we actually took on work with a lot of NGOs, like development work with a lot of NGOs. And we did, like, a little bit of consulting with some volunteers that came from Europe. So what we do, when we normally go into these rural areas, it's normally just me and my partner that we're going in, and we tend to recruit local labour, men and women.
Is that on purpose?
Yeah, it is. So that we can teach the community how to build with our technique. So when we leave, they can also build up their own communities, but then also we teach them the skill, and then we see who's very enthusiastic about the type of construction, and then we just offer them employment and accommodation in Accra. So far, like, it's worked, you know, quite well for us. We have about 15 boys at the moment. We've got, I think, 7 of them have come from Tamale. And then you've got the rest of them have all come from the Eastern region, from the few jobs that we've done. I mean, sometimes you do get instances where, you know, some of them, they come, especially the Northern boys, they come and then they leave because they get quite scared. You know, a lot of the Northerners have never even left their village before. Like, some of them have never even been to, like, the capital city in the North. So when they come to Accra, it's, like, completely overwhelming for them. That's
interesting.
And then also, they have, like, the language barrier. Like, people think that it's Ghana, just everyone just but there's so many different types of languages. Even in the north, there's so many different types of languages. So, yeah, they get, like, quite intimidated by how busy Accra is and obviously, like, the way that people do things and how fast-paced it is. But so far, like, our team have been with us for about 2 years. And I must say, like, I'm really, really happy and proud of our boys. Like, they're very, very loyal. They're very hardworking. And, you know, they're genuinely passionate about the company and its future.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, you know, we're really, like, a family. Like, we try not to be too, like, dictatory. Like, oh, you know, I'm the boss and, you know, you're the employees. Like, we're very much like a, you know, big sister, big brother, you know, relationship. And they're really respectful. So I can even say, like, now they're even to a point where they can even manage their own fights. Like, they're like, they really want to show us that, yeah, you know, like, we're really passionate about this company. And it's amazing because most of them don't even have, like, secondary education. Like, you know, some of them are still even learning English, but they're able to, because they're so passionate about the company and its future, like, they're able to just, you know, manage their own sites. Like, they can do things without our supervision now, so.
No, I love that, because even when you think about the unemployment rate among young people in Ghana, so what you're doing is even more amazing, giving people that opportunity to grow and learn. And I think it's also quite exciting that you've been able to, like, retain really good people, because when I talk to a lot of business owners in Ghana, a lot of them cite the fact that they aren't able to find, like, people that are able to stay loyal and, like, be reliable. I thought that was quite interesting and really good on your part. But what I wanted to tap into as well, because you said you have your boys, but, like, I guess you're the only woman in your team. What's that like?
I don't really feel like I'm the only woman in my team. Like, even though, like, I'm quite a girly girl, like, I'm a girly girl, but I really do feel like one of the boys. And I don't really feel like, they don't make me feel like, oh, you know, you're a woman, so you can't do certain stuff. I'd even say that like, it's the same thing I was saying at Cambridge. I'd even say that from me being in a leadership role, like, I think the boys have learned more about gender equality because they haven't really seen, because a lot of them are coming from the villages, like, the women in those villages are normally, you know, like, mothers or wives, or, you know, they
traditional
have
roles,
like, you know, stereotypical, gender roles. So for them to see a woman in my position is teaching them about, like, okay, so a woman is not just someone that's in the house, you know, someone that can also lead a team and lead a team very well. It is my goal, like, you know, once we're able to expand, for me to have an all-female team in the office, because I feel like, I don't know, I feel like women just think differently to men. You know, like, men are, like, men can think very, like, you know, straightforward, whereas, like, women, we're really good at, like, you know, multitasking.
Yeah, being analytical. Like, so many things,
like, yeah, very, yeah. So I do, you know, once we are able to expand, I do want to have, like, my own, you know, all-female, you know, team with me. And then, you know, also as a way of me, you know, empowering, you know, young women to, you know, believe in themselves and, you know what rights they have and to, you know, have confidence in what they're doing. And I do want to also take the same type of approach that we do when it comes to recruiting our boys. Because as I said before, like, we go into the village to recruit. We do get men and women coming out to volunteer their time. But normally, if we ask the women to come back with us, they can't because they already have their
commitments, their roles,
and responsibilities. So I don't know, maybe take on a different approach when I go into the villages, instead of, like, I don't know, offering them like a construction role, like maybe offering them more like
a
and even us in the office, we're the ones that make most of the decisions. So that will really, you know, empower them to know that they're the ones that are making the decisions over the boys. So yeah, that's one of my future goals.
That sounds good. Talking of future goals, so what sort of next for Hive Earth? Like, what are you hoping for in the next couple of years? So are you, like, looking for investment externally, or are you just looking to continue to grow organically? What's your sort of vision?
So we do, we are definitely looking for investment, but at the moment we are working on becoming investment ready. That's one thing that I've also learned about, you know, running a business and running a business in Africa. Like, sometimes people think that, oh, you know, I have this amazing idea, like, you know, why aren't people investing in me? Like, it's so hard to get funding. But then at the same time, it's really important to put yourself in a position that
right.
you want to invest right. in you. So I'll even say with us, you know, people look at us and think that, you know, we're doing amazing, but we haven't, you know, got like a complete product yet. So at the moment, we're looking on and building on our $15,000 prototype home. And then we actually want to create mortgages based on that.
Oh, wow.
So we're working with Stanbic Bank and Ghana Home Loans to provide low interest mortgages so that people can pay in installments for
that's amazing.
So,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so that you're paying, let's say, roughly, I don't know, like 1,200 cedis a month, which is, I don't know, roughly like £200 a month, which is affordable for a lot of people. So once we, you know, get our prototype in place and then we have our mortgage product in place, then from there we can say, okay, we've got like a ready package that we can actually give to an investor to help us to scale up, to take the amount of, you know, workload that we're gonna have. And then also besides our affordable homes, we really want to get into net zero homes where we add value to how sustainable the homes are.
So what does that mean?
So net zero is basically you're off the grid, but then you're still connected.
Right.
So, you know, normally people think that, oh, you know, I'm going to have solar in my house. But then a lot of people don't realize that with solar energy is not enough to power a home. Like, there's going to be some instances where maybe the sun is not shining as bright, or you're not going to get enough energy stored in your battery to actually power your house. So you're going to still need to be connected to the grid. So you're borrowing from the grid, but then when you do have excess energy, then you're giving back to the grid.
Okay.
So net zero in essence is at the end of the year, you don't have any utility bills. So we have that's one aspect of net zero, the solar or wind energy, and then also rainwater harvesting as well, which is self-explanatory.
Yeah,
just harvesting rainwater, filtering it, also connected to the grid but borrowing back and taking whenever you need to, and then also it includes our underground cooling system. In Ghana, like, having AC is like the number one consumer of electricity, and it's so expensive to power an AC. So with our homes, we're going to have a natural AC where we have a pipe that we use to dig under the ground. And then we have a solar pump that extracts the cool air from underground. And it's cool, clean air. And then that comes up into the homes and it just constantly pumps cool air. So it makes the indoor room temperature really cool. And you're breathing clean air. Like, you know, clean air, like, it's really bad for you.
Make you really sick.
It can make you really sick, yeah. So that's another aspect of our business. And then also just doing, like, high-end homes. Like, you know, once we have our affordable home side done, then we also want to, me and my partner are passionate about, you know, just our own, you know, high-end projects, like maybe, like, building, like, an amazing earth home, like, near a waterfall or something.
Yeah.
You know, like, or just having like our own high village where we can train people and, you know, they can, you know, use that skill to go to other African countries, because we get a lot of people wanting to learn about our technique. So we have a lot of people in the pipeline. We just need the funding.
Wow, honestly, the sky is really the limit, especially when it comes to the eco-friendly sort of techniques, because I feel as though Africa is, with all our natural resources, there's so much we can do in terms of like, and everything is literally natural on our doorsteps, on the ground, and things that we could really like create. So yeah, that's exciting. And even speaking of like your high-end visions for high-end properties, and obviously I've seen like pictures of your properties and the technique, but the way it looks, it's very visually appealing with the way it, the different colors, the way you stacked it and stuff. So I can imagine that visually, how visually that would be, looks so good, especially if it's somewhere like very picturesque. So yeah, that sounds amazing. One of the last things I wanted to ask is, of course, like, my podcast is called Diaspora Talks, so I wanted to really tap into that side of things. So say I'm someone from London, and I want to get into property, which a lot of people want to do back home, is invest in property. But I'm interested in Rammed Earth and like your eco-friendly solution. So what would be the process? What would the process be for me to get involved, to possibly invest, or to, you know, create a property that is using this technique?
What do you mean in terms of an individual buying it?
Yeah, individual buying it, and also like investing in the business in general.
Okay. I think just finding what problems are out there and how you can create a solution to it. I mean, as I said, like with us, like the main aim to go into this sector was to create affordable housing that's also eco-friendly using local materials. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe if you wanted to, you know, have your own estate, you can, you know, buy like a bunch of, you know, high verve homes. Mm. You can have like create maybe your own gated community. You know, at the moment we have a client that wants to have his own resort, which we're building for him.
Wow.
Using four of our earth homes. He wants to call it Barefoot.
Wow. So some like people really have money, boy.
I know. So he wants to use it for like an artist, writers, retreat.
Oh my gosh, I can just like imagine that. Wow.
Yeah, his location is beautiful. Like, is literally like, it takes a while to get there because it's literally on the side of a mountain, but you see like the whole of Accra at night, so you see all the lights, but it's really, really beautiful. So yeah, he's going to use it for that. So it all depends on, you know, what you want to use it for. We have somebody that wants to use some of our earth construction to build a hotel. And then we also have like a singer who she's like really, you know, famous for like and producing like authentic like Ghanaian music. Like, she sings her language and everything, and she wants to use the earth homes to kind of create like a mini resort, so that, you know, when she goes to perform in Europe, that people will have a place that they can experience her culture.
Wow.
A lot of the time, like when we even get volunteers coming, they're always like, oh, you know, there's nothing in Ghana where, you know, you can just experience going to sleep in a mud house. And they're like,
wow. Like, yeah.
They really, yeah, no, they really, really like that. You know, like we have what's that place in London, London Dungeon, where you can go in and you kind of experience how like
they don't have that.
Anything and we don't realize like how fascinating honestly our culture is to people that are not African. So she wants to create something like that. So yeah, it all depends on, you know, what you want to use it for. Earth homes are great, but you know, there's so many benefits. Like, as cheesy as it sounds, I think it's something that is really designed to, you know, speak to the African soul.
I hear you.
Like, there's so many benefits. You know, soundproof, it's pest proof, it's non-toxic. You know, it's thermally insulated, so it keeps the indoor temperature really cool. And then also, if you want to add the net zero aspect to it, so you're, you know, completely off the grid, it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff to
So what would the process be? Would we get in contact with you directly, or is there some sort of like process that we have to go through?
So at the moment, we've got our website. It's just highverf.com, but at the moment it's actually under construction, but then it's because we are completely overwhelmed.
Okay, that's a good thing, I guess.
It is a good thing to have. We're completely overwhelmed, and we are really working on and bringing our $15,000 prototype to market.
Right.
Because the bulk of our customers, the bulk of inquiries that we get are people that want affordable homes. So we really want to get our prototype home done, and then we also want to have our mortgage package done. So when we do like relaunch, then we have those things ready, because we have so many inquiries, and at the moment we're quite a small team, but if you can send an email to us either at highverf@gmail.com, or you can send an email direct to me, which is just my name, joelle.ison@highverf.com.
I'll put all those details in like the podcast description and everything, so that'll be fine. But okay, that's really exciting. The last thing I wanted to ask you, and just to end on, is you spoke about your journey, and like you told us like your story and like what made you stick out in Ghana. But I wanted you to sort of pinpoint some top tips for someone that is thinking about moving to Ghana or somewhere in a similar market to build a business like you have. What are your top tips for surviving and really like, you know, going for it?
Oh, what are my top tips? You have to be resilient. Like, you have to, because living and working in Ghana is a completely different ball game to wherever you're coming from. Like, everything is different. Like, the culture, the way that people deal with you, like, everything, even like living conditions. You know, when you're in Ghana on holiday, like the food you eat is completely different than the food you're eating when you're living there. Like, you know, when you're on holiday, you're at like some but then when you're living there, it's literally kente for breakfast and cocoa. So it's just completely different. Also, this is the common thing. When people come to Ghana, like, I think that sometimes they assume that because they're coming from the West that they know better. I think it's really important to not humble yourself, but to really, like, listen to people on the ground when they're trying to, like, you know, give you some sort of advice. Like, I've fallen into that trap before. So I can even say that with me, like, if it wasn't for my team, because they're local, I wouldn't be where I am today. Like, I wouldn't be where it is today, because they know best, like, they know the terrain. So it's very important to collaborate and to, as I say in Ghana, be free with everybody. Because it's like, when you come in, like, thinking like, oh, you know, I'm from the UK, I'm from the States, and I know this, and this is how we do things over here now. it's not like that. And, like, you have to, as I say, do as the Romans do. And then also, I think it's important to kind of look at the fundamentals of running a business as well. A lot of people that are coming to Ghana, I feel, have not really run a business before. And I feel like the fundamentals of running a business everywhere is kind of the same. Like, even with me, like, I run businesses in the UK and I've, you know, given up. But then I really think that, like, one of the, you know, main reasons that you know, maybe businesses succeed is just resilience, mm-hmm. and just to keep going. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with every business, like with every like success story that you hear, they always get to a point where they're just like, oh, you know, I literally had nothing, and you know, I was at the point of giving yeah. up, and you know, I sold my house or my car, my wife or my husband left me, right. whatever. So I think, you know, when you get to that point, don't think that it's Ghana's fault. Mm. Like, it's just how business mm. is. So I always advise, like, if you can maybe, like, run some small business in the UK just to see how running the business is before you even come to Ghana, that's something yeah. that can kind of give you some sort of practice. Yeah. It really is the same everywhere. It's the same problems that you run into the UK running the business is not the same problems in Ghana, but similar. Yeah. But
in a Ghanaian way. Yeah, no, I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. No, that's amazing. Thank you so much. I think a lot of people are going to get a lot from your story. But yeah, like I said, I'll put all your details in the description so people can get to know you even for future, when you guys have more capacity for more people, just so that they can watch this space and watch your journey. But yeah, thank you so much, Joelle.
Thank you so much.